partner, send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God bless you. Be a blessing and pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the information.
100 years ago, Greenland was a green all along the southern part of Greenland. And when Leif Erikson and the Vikings had their communities along the coast of Greenland, and they used to grow crops there, and they used to grow cows there, and they used to grow grapes there. And then starting probably about 1200 or so, as they began moving into a global phase, why, of course, Greenland began to get more and colder, and by the 1300s, why, most people had moved away from Greenland. It was no longer habitable. And we went then into a prolonged period of global cooling that ended sometime in the 1600s, mid-1600s, and then we began to get into a period of global warming again, and there is global warming, but it's been going on for 300 or 400 years. And as far as, of course, this dramatic spike that you've seen, this is all a scam. Why? Because they have to frighten you to death to get you to go along with what is really planned, and that is the destruction of Western civilization. The Kyoto Protocol calls for actually the reduction of carbon emissions by 80% by the year 2050, which will mean you'll have to give up your car, you'll have to give up your electric heat, you'll have to give up your air conditioning, we'll have to do away with most of certainly manufacturing, anything that has to do with the use of electricity. It is a direct attack on Western civilization. Well, how could that be? I mean, everybody knows global warming is a reality. It is, but it has nothing to do, of course, with the man's activity in increasing CO2. I'd like you to tell me how increasing 100 parts per million of the CO2 is going to create the disastrous results they're talking about. And, of course, they're simply lying. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Barry calling from Santa Cruz. Let's see what Barry has to say. Barry, how are you doing? Barry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, fine.
I liked your explanation. It was very plain and simple. I love your voice. It's deep and rich. It's scientific fact, and I don't think it's a conspiracy to ruin Western civilization at all. I think it's just scientific fact that they know from ice cores the amount of carbon dioxide in the ice going way back 200 years. They can measure it. So we could all hold our breath for a day and quit expelling CO2. We could all gasp and gasp and gasp for air for the whole day, and then that would slow it down, huh?
Well, I think that probably, it will even go a little bit higher than it is. But actually, CO2 is beneficial. In fact, we've had dramatic increase in the amount of tree growth. And, of course, there's a wonderful article. If you'd like a copy of it, you can certainly leave your name and address. We'll send a copy. It comes from the latest article by, I believe it's Art Robinson in Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. But basically, and I've forgotten whether it's 20 billion additional feet of timber growth here, over this last 10 or 15 years. Actually, if you begin to see the increase of the girth of trees over the last few years as the level of CO2 has gone up, of course, the trees are growing much more rapidly, and of course, they take the CO2 out of the atmosphere. But these people who are talking about the global warming, like Al Gore, he's got a 10,000 square foot house. He uses probably 10 times as much electricity, and his carbon footprint's probably 10 times that of the average individual. And yet he's going around telling us how terrible it is. He thinks we all ought to have one child. He's got three or four. I mean, he gives hypocrisy a bad name. So what are your thoughts, Barry?
He's the biggest demagogue on this ever.
He really is pretty foolish, isn't he?
He's got a good uniform. He's cloaked in all this stuff. He's set the stage perfectly, like he's going to save us all.
Well, have you ever heard of course, of this whole idea of global biodiversity, global biodiversity analysis that came out of the Second Earth Summit? Let me tell you a little bit about it, because it's really rather fascinating, because Al Gore was part of that. It was 1991 when, of course, Prince Charles, the sustainable prince, the Prince of Wales over in England, And he's really the man who's coordinating this whole thing, he and Marie Strong. But Prince Charles put out an order, and all of the elite from all over the world came together on the good ship Britannia, the King's Royal Yacht. And Al Gore was there, and certainly the leaders of business and industry and banking were there, the media. And they hammered out an agreement on what would happen at the Second Earth Summit, which was to be held in Rio in 1992. And they came up with this whole scam of sustainable development. The whole idea is there are too many of us here on Earth and we're living too well, and they've got to lower our living standards. They've got to get us out of our cars. They've got to get us to stop consuming electricity. They've got to get us to stop using water because we're running out of water.
Stop using oil.
Oil, my goodness, we're running out of oil, and of course we're using too many natural resources. And so they came up with something called the Global Biodiversity Analysis Report. It's 1,142 pages, I think it is, and it's published by the Cambridge University Press, but one of our friends actually analyzed this. Took her 3 months going through this line by line, and we actually have this in our sustainable development syllabus, and what they're really talking about is how are we going to get the common people to be willing to lower their living standards. And they really talk about getting the living standards down to that the way it would be of the people living in Eastern Europe, which is sort of like a peasant, very, very low living standards, especially in 92. And basically they want to get us out of our cars. And of course, they're going to do that by getting the price of oil up so very, very high, so you're not going to be able to afford your car. And you think the price of gasoline's high now, you haven't seen anything. They're doing the same thing by raising the price of electricity, and it was all a scam. They sold us we had to have electricity, deregulation, because that's how we're going to lower the prices, and if we could only bring competition into this monopoly. When you have competition in a monopoly, why, of course, you drive the prices down. Well, when you got a monopoly, there is
everybody should be investing in energy companies right now.
You're probably going to make a lot of money doing that, because they're going to make money hand over fist as they drive the price of electricity and oil and these things right out of sight, and we'll have no choice but limiting our consumption, and they'll have no choice, no alternative in making a fortune. Well, give us any thoughts that you have. Incidentally, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. So, the trouble is, Barry, so many people honestly believe the lie that it is man's activity that's leading to global warming rather than the logical explanation that this comes from the sun. And, of course, I always like to say, why are the polar ice caps melting on Mars? And the other side has no explanation. Go ahead, Barry. Anything you'd like to say?
I've never thought about that.
Well, of course, the reason it's melting is because this has to do with the solar cycles. And they go through solar cycles, and of course, when the sun gets hotter, we have a period of global warming. When the sun gets cooler, we have a period of global cooling. And that's, of course, what happened, starting about 1,000 years ago. And here we are warming up again.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Good night.
Good night. Okay, fine. Well, that was Barry calling. And if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available.
Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets. And that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Streams too.
I've never heard that, but that's an interesting thing. I'd be interested in knowing more about it. But I will tell you that what we're doing, of course, is laying ourselves open for real problems because we do not have the large stores of grains that we've had in the past. In fact, we have the lowest stores of grains we've had since 1972, and I'm talking about worldwide. The price of food has almost doubled over in China. They do not have the stores there. We do not have the stores here. And if we got a bad crop, or if China had a bad crop, or certainly Brazil or Australia, which are the big food producers, we could get into a real food shortage here in the United States and throughout the world, and in the countries where they really don't have the money to buy these products. We could see famine developing.
Nobody's addressing that, and these presidential candidates we have, you know, they don't address anything important. It's all distraction. They're not focusing on what's really important, and that's our basic survival. You know, with the food problem, I think is probably the next thing that will happen.
I share your concern.
Yeah.
But see, the thing is that all of this is unnecessary. There are massive supplies of oil up off the North Slope. There are massive supplies of oil in the Arctic Wildlife Reserve. So why aren't we drilling up there? Oh, we can't drill it. We've got to But you have to understand the oil companies finance the environmentalists. Mm, yeah. They benefit from creating the artificial shortages. They benefit from blocking the building of other refineries.
Right.
The oil companies do not want competition.
No.
And of course, we pointed out in the past, we have a 14th set on oil, and we do hope people would want to get it, but one of the interviews is with a gentleman who represented the small wildcatters here in the United States. What did they want? Did they want a guaranteed price for oil? Absolutely not. They wanted a floor for oil, a $25 a barrel floor, so that they could be sure that they'd get $25 a barrel if they could bring in oil. Knowing full well, and this is they've done in the past, of course, is that they've been able to bring in oil wells and produce oil very, very cheaply. And then, of course, the big boys just dropped the price down to $10 a barrel and put them out of business and bankrupted them. They wanted a guaranteed $25 a barrel. And we would, if we had a floor of $25 a barrel, we'd have more oil than we know what to do with.
Mm.
The world is awash with oil, but they're not going to tell the American
people.
They
don't want to tell us
this
that.
This whole idea of peak oil was actually put out by a man named Dr. Hubert, who worked for Shell Oil Company. He came up with this in the 1950s, and he said by 1971 we would reach in the United States peak oil. Now, and he's absolutely right, we peaked our production in 1972, both of natural gas and oil. How did Dr. Hubert know that? Why, he worked for Shell Oil, and they were financing the environmental movement that began to cut... To undercut the ability to drill oil here in the United States. So he could tell exactly what was going to happen because it was all a script. It was all scripted. And it was the environmental movement that blocked then the offshore drilling, that blocked the development of oil in government land and even on private land.
You know, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but Dick Cheney has, you know, Dick Cheney is very prominent, you know, figure as far as oil is concerned. It seems to me that he's been involved in a lot of things with the oil business, you know.
The Dick Cheney gives corruption a bad name.
Yeah.
I mean, Dick Cheney was getting a pension from, they called it deferred earnings, and he may still be getting it, but for a long time, after he was the vice president and getting a full salary, while he was also getting deferred salary from Halliburton. Some people might think that was a conflict of interest because Halliburton, of course, was getting all sorts of no-bid contracts from the government, but
right.
Nobody wants to say that to suggest that Dick Cheney is not an honorable and a man of integrity. But if you've never read, of course, Kathy O'Brien's book, the Transformation of America, she has a whole section in there on Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
I'd suggest you get the book and read it.
I should read it.
You'll find the real Dick Cheney there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, they all fit into it, you know. they all help each other, and it's like a, you know, you got to put the pieces together as to who is who, who's doing what.
You know? I'll tell you what, Dick Cheney is one of the key players in this thing.
Yeah.
And when you see Dr. George Bush, you know, he's there and he's waving his hand.
Yeah.
What you notice is a string, and up to the sky there's Dick Cheney.
Yes, right.
Holding a little string.
Yeah.
Thanks. Hold on.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is, well, it's you out there in the listening audience. And so this is Open Lines Wednesday, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to talk on global warming, if you want to talk on anything really, want to talk about certainly the threat to the food supply. You want to talk about certainly what's going on in the Middle East. You want to talk about what happened back at Virginia Tech. There's a lot more to this story than we've been told. I don't have all the answers, but anyway, we'd love to hear what you think about what's going on. Again, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I think maybe we should finish talking about the whole global warming scam, because the other side has invested a phenomenal amount of money and time and effort in convincing people here in America that global warming is a reality. And, of course, they're teaching this as reality in schools, so many of our school children honestly believe we're running out of water, we're running out of oil, we're running out of natural resources, we're running out of air, clean air, and that if we don't stop global warming, there's going to be a catastrophe, a global catastrophe, and, of course, the Earth is going to be destroyed. And it just isn't true. I want you to remember, as we've said before, only 1% of the atmosphere are greenhouse gases. And then of the greenhouse gases, 95% is water. And the other 5%, 3% of that other 5%, 3.6% of the other 5% is CO2, and the other percent and a half is made of a methane, which will absorb about 20 times as much heat as CO2. CO2 is a very, very poor heat absorbent. It's a very inefficient means. It's a very inefficient greenhouse gas. So how can they convince everybody that CO2 is responsible for global warming? Well, the old adage is, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincing it enough, everybody will believe. And I will tell you, of course, you need to get our 4-tape set on global warming, and you need to hear my interviews with Art Robinson. And he actually sent out questionnaires to, tens of thousands of scientists, and 17,000 scientists wrote back and said, humankind has nothing to do with it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's Open Line Wednesday. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I will repeat once again. The atmosphere is 79% nitrogen, 20% oxygen, 1% greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases are 95% water, about 3.6% CO2, and the other a percentage and a half, a little bit more perhaps, are methane, nitrous oxide, and other gases. The other gases are much more effective as far as certainly reflecting heat than CO2. CO2 is a very, very inefficient greenhouse gas, and of course the level of CO2 has increased from 260 parts per million to 360 parts per million over the last 55 years. In other words, the percentage of the atmosphere which it makes up CO2 is 0.036%. 0.036%. Remember, 1% of greenhouse gases, and this is 36 thousandths of the is a 0.036% is CO2. How is that going to produce the catastrophic effects? And of course, the truth of the matter is, there's no way that it could. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. When you've got all these scientists on the intergovernmental panel on climate control who want to keep their jobs, or who agree with the elite that they really want to lower the living standards of everybody here on Earth. And this is what it really is. It is an attack on, of course, Western civilization. It is an attack on certainly on any industrialized society. And, of course, what's really so amazing about this, the Kyoto Protocol, if you read it, you'll find out that initially we would have to cut our carbon emissions back to where they were in 1990 and 20% below that. By the year 2050, we would have to limit 80% of the carbon emissions that we are using today. But it would not affect China, which is the largest polluter in the world. It would not affect India, which is the largest polluter in the world. It would not affect any of the developing countries. It would affect France, but France doesn't have a large carbon footprint because they use nuclear energy. Why don't we use nuclear energy? Why we don't use it? Because we don't know First of all, what we would do with the spent nuclear fuel. Why don't we do what every other country in the world does and reprocess it? Oh, we might produce plutonium. Well, why don't then we just burn the plutonium? Why don't we make a breeder plant where you actually would produce more in the way of fuel, and you would cut back on the use of uranium? You could actually then begin to actually change and do away with the depleted uranium, which is becoming a real problem for the world. They've done everything they could to block a solution. They do not want a solution. They want the problem. Because only by having a problem can they regulate the American people. And that's what it's really all about. It's about lowering your living standards. They know exactly what they're doing, but they just don't want you to know. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we've got Jack calling from Michigan. He wants to talk about Virginia Tech. Hi, Jack. What are your thoughts on Virginia Tech?
Yes, indeed. Good evening. And I got to thinking, the president has stated many times that if we don't take the war to the terrorists are going to bring the terrorism here, right?
Right. That's just what we're being told.
Yeah, and of course, I think most Americans want to pull out ASAP, and now we see that the two-name, one-party Congress is just playing their same partisan politic game. But it appears, though, that this is a, I'm going to call it a conspiracy event. This kid seems to have conducted this murder spree with stone cold composure, as one would expect from a trained assassin, uh-huh. i.e. Manchurian candidate assassin. And wouldn't it be interesting if it just seemed to have the effect that, oh well, looky here, this is some sort of a Asian Mideastern connection, and they're bringing the terror home here. We can't give up now. We have to continue to fund and resupply and you know, send more troops, and we got to keep the war on terrorism going over there, because if we don't, we're going to have more events like this.
Well, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, Jack, because I don't think anybody suggests that this is has anything to do with terrorism, but there is more to the story that we've been told, and I don't know all the answers. I will tell you what I do know. Would you like me to share with you? This is not a specific terrorist event, but it is a very abnormal. There's something very wrong with the whole story.
Indeed.
What's wrong with the story? Well, number one, first of all, this young man had apparently shot a couple of people, and then instead of locking down the university, you know, closing everything, getting people out of the university, you know, why, nothing happens. They bring in some police, but they don't send everybody home. I know, for instance, when we were in Las Vegas a year ago, there was a shooting at the school. They immediately locked down that school. Nobody could go out of the rooms. Nobody could move around. They had police every place in the school until they got where sure things were under control. They didn't do that at Virginia Tech. And then there was about 20 minutes from the time that this fellow went to the other place and started shooting before the police really moved in. In fact, they let him do all the shooting, and it wasn't until the shooting had stopped for quite some time that the police went in. Why didn't they rush right in there? And, of course, they didn't do it. You have to ask yourself, why not? I mean, that's what the police are there for. It's their job to take chances and to move in and try to protect the lives of the people who are being killed. But they did not do that. And the question is why. And then we're told that this man, a young man, that very troubled young man, shot himself in the face, so his face was unrecognizable. Now, if you want to kill yourself, I mean, you put the gun into your mouth and pull the trigger, or you shoot yourself in the temple, but could you imagine sitting there or standing there holding the gun a foot away from your face and pointing the muzzle at it and shooting yourself in the face? Does that really make sense to you? That bothers me, and bothers me very deeply.
I also heard Dr. Stan, he was on Prozac.
I really don't know, but certainly we know that this is the kissing cousin of the Luvox that the boys at Columbine were on.
Yeah.
I will tell you this: what a little I do know. Number one, I do know that we have, as you know, we have a sort of a home business, a mail order business, and with a period of about an hour today, we get orders between 8 and 10 copies of a book called Access Denied, written by Kathy Phillips and Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. And apparently somebody had called into the Alex Jones show, I've learned later, and had said that there was a section in that book about a special laboratory in that town where Virginia Tech is, a mind control laboratory.
Oh no!
This is all I can tell you is that we sold all these books because of the call that went into to Alex Jones, and there's something in the book. Supposedly, I haven't had a chance to get hold of Mark or Kathy and to find out. But at least what's up on the internet, and you could check this out, is that there was some sort of a mind control laboratory because Mark Phillips had been involved in mind control, working for the CIA. Before he, of course, left the CIA and took on Kathy O'Brien. The second thing I do know is that Ted Kaczynski, remember the bomber, the Unabomber?
Oh, yeah, of course.
But what most people do not know is he was a victim of a CIA mind control operation. And there's a book we actually carried for some time about that. When Kaczynski was, I think he went to Harvard, he was recruited into a program, a psychological program, where they set out to control his mind. And, of course, he volunteered for this program, and they set out to destroy his belief in everything,
wow,
in right and wrong. They played games with his mind for about a year, and he never recovered from this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of this, of course, that if this very, very good book, we have it in my library here, and we could, anybody who wants to get the name of it, we probably could track it down. Ted Kaczynski was a victim of a CIA mind control experiment financed by our government at Harvard University. And what the relationship, anyway, it was a mind control experiment. What part the CIA played, I don't know, but it was a mind control experiment. And he never recovered from it. And it was after that, of course, that he went ahead and started simply mailing bombs to people. And we saw that his disastrous results with Kaczynski. He never recovered from what they did to his brain. Now, did something like this happen at Virginia Tech? We don't know yet.
Right.
But there's something very strange with the story. And, of course, immediately after it's reported, what do we hear? Why, there's Dianne Feinstein saying we've got to have more gun control laws.
Yeah.
And this is the same Dianne Feinstein who, when she was mayor of San Francisco, insisted on, of course, having a gun to protect herself because her predecessor, the mayor of San Francisco, had been shot, and she wanted to protect herself. Well, of course, when she was chided for supporting gun control for others but not for herself, she said, my life was in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would like to suggest that the people who were primarily responsible for what happened were the people within our legislatures at the national and state level who have made every educational institution or almost every educational institution in the United States a shooting zone because there are no guns there to protect the people. And if there had been guns in any of the hands of any of those students, they could have stopped the slaughter.
Yep.
But, of course, when you take the guns away from the people, they have no means to protect themselves. And the direct responsibility for what happened here are those people who disarmed the students and disarmed the faculty and would not, of course, allow anybody to have a gun and did not provide a policeman in every schoolroom, because that's the only way you can protect our students if you're going to make sure that nobody has a weapon, because, believe me, the criminals and the psychopaths will always get weapons. And how can we defend ourselves if the government is disarmed?
In fact, Dr. Stan, it occurred to me the military actively recruits on high school and college campuses. And I got to thinking, look at this national volunteer program that the president has vigorously supported. Well, why couldn't we enlist the skills of the retired Special Forces fellows, the Green Berets, the Navy SEALs. I bet anything, Dr. Stan, they would just be ecstatic with the opportunity to go to the college campuses, wherever they are, and work, if necessary, with the local law enforcement. But they could be right there.
Well, I think what we really need to do is allow the people, responsible people, to have weapons to defend themselves. And there's a recent study that was done in Texas on the people who are licensed to carry weapons, concealed weapons. And they found out that these people were not committing the crimes. And wherever they were in Texas, there was far less crime. Why? Because very, very few people would go in and start shooting when they never knew who it was who might be standing next to them, would have a weapon and shoot them back again.
In fact, Dr. Stan, there's precedent that it was Luby's Cafeteria in the around 1990, was it, or late 80s. Some shooter went in, and some fella with a weapon on his body, he took the guy out.
Well,
and then we
see.
Have the precedent in Europe. I'm sure it's Switzerland. It might be Italy as well, maybe some others, where the government actually has an active civilian marksmanship training program. And in fact, Dr. Stan, if there's anyone in the audience who has access to the American Rifleman magazine, it was November of 91, the executive director was a D-Day veteran of the NRA, executive director, and he did a comprehensive review of the U.S. code as it relates to militias. And he cited the fact that in the unorganized militia, which is every able-bodied American, from 18 to, I think, age 70, the government was mandated to provide weapons and training for all able-bodied Americans in the who wanted to participate in the unorganized militia.
Well, I will tell you that when the time that our country was founded, it was assumed that everybody would have a gun. We had people going door to door, not to take the guns away, but to make sure that every man had a gun. It was his responsibility to have that gun, to have ammunition for it, because, of course, everybody had to be able to defend themselves and defend our country.
Yep, yep.
And that was the way it was here in America.
Well, we have to get
when
back
when
to
we
the,
were free. When we had a free society, the people were armed, and they were there to defend our country. They were there not to send our boys halfway around the world to kill other people's sons and daughters, you know, for entirely different reasons, having nothing to do with the defense of America. And believe me, we are not fighting terrorism in Iraq, and we are not fighting, you know, for democracy in Iraq, because we've established an authoritarian Shia or Muslim state there. The Constitution we put in there has everything under Sharia law. There will be no freedom there. It will simply be a Muslim theocracy. And that's what our boys are fighting for, is a Muslim theocracy in Iraq. But that's because nobody has told the American people what's in the Iraqi Constitution. But what we need to do, I believe, is have an armed population here. People certainly should have to pass certain tests before they have a concealed weapon, but if they had no criminal background and no psychological problems, why, of course, they should be allowed to do that. And what I would like to know is how this young man there, of course, in Virginia Tech, who had already been, of course, cited, you know, for psychiatric problems, who had actually been cited for stalking girls in the past, was able to go out and buy a couple of weapons. I thought they had all sorts of background checks that the government was supposed to be doing. Maybe those background checks really don't work very well.
Indeed, Dr. Stan.
Well, anyway, we got real problems, Jack. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, that's saying a lot there, Dr. Stan. I totally concur, and I admonish people to... I'm going to circulate a petition in my community here for that purpose.
Okay, God bless you, Jack. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Jack. Now we have time for one more call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you'd like to join us for Open Line Wednesday. And next week we're going to ask you what the levels of CO2 are in the atmosphere. I hope you can remember. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and Chris, we've been talking this evening about global warming and pointing out that it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if it's said often enough by every means of communication, why, of course, people will tend to believe it. Are the snows of Kilimanjaro receding? Yes, they are. And the snow cap there in Kilimanjaro is receding. And certainly the glaciers are receding. They've been receding since 1600. But, of course, they've receded very, very little since about 1940. In fact, most of the global warming in the last century occurred before, and it was about 0.6 degrees, occurred before 1940. And since then, we've actually had a little bit of global cooling. In fact, it was because of that that in 1950 and in 1960, they were talking about the coming ice age. And that, of course, has warmed up a little bit since then, but it's right back to where it was about in 1940. So, are the polar ice caps melting? Yes, the polar ice caps are melting, but really very little. They melt in the summer. Of course, they freeze over, at least in the Arctic, in the wintertime. What about the polar bears? Yeah, how many times have you seen those pictures on television of the polar bear with sort of a frantic look on his face, and he's on this little ice floe. He's sort of floating along there. You know, and you know very well that ice floe is going to melt and he's going to fall in the water and drown. Ladies and gentlemen, a polar bear can swim 100 miles in the icy water there to get seals, and they don't have any difficulty swimming long distances. We have more polar bears today than we had 50 years ago. The polar bear population is increasing, not decreasing at all, contrary to everything you're being told. This is the most clever scam I've ever seen. But because they control the educational system, they're convincing our young people, they've got them out marching in the streets, demanding that we do something about global warming. And, of course, they're demanding, of course, that people begin cutting back on the use of, their cars, and they're getting the price of gasoline up. Now, it may very well be that we are going to go into nuclear energy. I certainly hope we do. It is the most efficient and cost-effective and safest means of actually providing electricity. But Western civilization is under attack. When you understand that, then, of course, you really understand what this is all about. There are people who hate America. And there are people who, and I would include that among those, Al Gore, who hates America, who believes what we need is rule by a ruling elite, and of course he's going to be one of them, dedicated to a new world order and a new world religion. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course I always enjoy the open lines. I hope you do, and I hope you'll always feel free to give us a call. If you'd like to know more about the situation as far as global warming is concerned, we have a 4-tape set on it, and we'll be glad to send you an article that appeared. It's only 2 pages long, put out by Doctors for Disaster Preparedness, and we'd be glad to send you one of those free of charge, or certainly go to Dr. Art Robinson's website and read his excellent article up there. And that's just Google in Art Robinson. I think you'll find it fascinating. We have a great syllabus on sustainable development. We have a talk on sustainable development on video. And we have a 4-tape set on sustainable development. We also have a tape on sustainable development that was put together by our good friend Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. So we'll be glad to. Those are all available, but if you'd like to know how to get them, call us at 1-800-544-8927. To put things perhaps into a little better perspective, let me suggest you consider getting my talk on the forbidden secret. That's the forbidden secret, which will tell you the secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years by the secret societies. And, of course, why is it important? Why? Because it will explain to you why we have our troops in the Middle East today. And lastly, of course, the new DVD, Riddles in Stone by Chris Pitto, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. We've got Sean who's sitting on the line here. Sean, do you have a real quick question?
Yeah, my question for you, Dr. Stan, well, I guess it's not a question, it's just a comment, is that with the deal that happened down in Virginia, it brought back to me the memory of what happened down in Tasmania and Australia.
Right.
With Martin Bryant, and this thing just looks pretty close to the same type of deal.
Well, Chris, what they want to use is to get gun control in, but gun control is not going to solve the problem because they took all the guns away in Australia. You still got as much crime and violence.
Exactly, and you know that's exactly what happened, and that's what I see happening here. You know, is trying to be a catalyst for the same type of thing, which most people would know, but it is kind of really scary because the same thought came up: how did he get to do what he did? And the same thing happened in Tasmania. You know, it was like,
and of course, like, in Washington D.C., where they have the strictest gun control laws in the nation, it's also the murder capital of the United States. In England, where they took the guns away from the people who can't get a handgun there, they have more gun-related violence than ever before. And you know, the most amazing thing is law-abiding people will turn in the guns and the criminals won't. Can you believe that?
I can definitely believe it. I've seen it with my own eyes.
I'm going to have to let you go because we're out of time. God bless you. Thanks very much for calling, Sean.
Thank you. Have a good night.
God bless. Bye-bye. And okay, fine. And of course, remember, if you'd like to, know more about my ministry or learn more about the talk on the forbidden secrets or the material on the 4-tape set on global warming or the 4-tape set on sustainable development that comes along with the syllabus and the video. We'll give you the background of this whole scam. Our telephone number to call would be 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. And at RadioLiberty.com, you can actually listen to our programs live 4 hours a day. The programs are archived or they're on MP3. And you can go to Global Star 4 there at my website, or you can Google that in separately, and you can listen to the 24-hour a day live feed we have coming from Radio Liberty. And of course, it was my programs, Joyce Riley's programs, each 9 hours a day, and then Chuck Chrismeyer and Pastor Butch Paul, 3 hours a day. So we basically have 24-hour-a-day conservative Christian radio at Global Star 4. You can get it on the Internet. Of course, you can, if you don't have access, you have shortwave, you can get our programs on shortwave as well, of course, 4 hours a day. Or, of course, if you have the satellite, you can get on Telstar 5, you can hear our program. So the programs are there. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And well, for the second hour this evening, we have Dr. Kenneth Stoller, who's a doctor medical doctor. He was the chairman of the pediatric committee of the International Committee on Hyperbaric Medical Society, a foundation, and he's a clinical assistant professor at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine, Department of Pediatrics, and of course he has his board in hyperbaric medicine and his American board in pediatrics. And I really didn't know too much about Dr. Stoller or what we were going to be talking about, so I went to his webpage and found out, of course, his work with hyperbaric oxygen therapy and, of course, the idea of treating people with brain injuries. And I shall never forget when this young lady was being done away with down there. You remember the young lady with a brain injury, and of course, she was going to be allowed to starve to death there, and the family wanted to keep her alive, and her husband, who had already been married and was had an adulterous affair, of course, wanted her to be done away with, and so she was done away with. But I remember reading that there were some doctors who said, you know, maybe with hyperbaric therapy, why, of course, she would improve. And I'd never heard of hyperbaric therapy, but this one doctor who had been a consultant on the case had suggested that she had not exhausted her full opportunities for improvement. Well, I was really fascinated then to, of course, run across Dr. Stoller and the material he has, so I'm going to let him tell you about hyperbaric oxygen therapy, autism, and mental disorders, and the dramatic improvement that's been seen in the past. Dr. Stoller, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and tell us how you got interested in this and how this can benefit people with brain injuries.
I got involved in the mid-90s when a friend of mine was found essentially dead in bed by his wife. He was revived by paramedics. And when I came to visit him in the hospital, he was still in coma. And I couldn't believe that the therapy at the end of the 20th century for someone in coma was to be laying there with just an IV plugged into your arm. I just felt there had to be something else, and was really taken aback and disappointed that he wasn't being offered any therapy. Not that I knew what that therapy was at the time, but there had to be something. So that put me on the road to discovering what a very small cadre of hyperbaric physicians were doing in the area of neurorehabilitation. And I quickly found out that children with cerebral palsy were being treated, and because I was a pediatrician, that really got my juices flowing in terms of my interest. And of course, I had to overcome the usual type of skepticism that if this were really true, wouldn't we have been taught this in medical school? Of course, I already knew by then there were a lot of things that aren't taught in medical school. So.
Yes, that's so true, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, anyway, of course, then, of course, you got into this, and of course, with autism, and there's so many people out there who've had brain injuries, certainly some of them at time of birth, and some of them incurred it as they certainly have grown up and had a head injury. And I'm going to be very interested in knowing as far as Alzheimer's disease and some of the dementias that this can help at all. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Candace Stoller on hyperbaric oxygen. Well, Dr. Stoller, go right ahead and tell us, you know, what you've learned.
Well, first of all, you brought up the case of Terry Schiavo, and I think there was a point where hyperbaric oxygen therapy would have helped her. I don't think it would have helped her at the time that the controversy came to light. Hyperbaric oxygen does not bring dead brain cells back to life, but what it is especially good at is reviving neurons that have been taken offline, neurons that are not functioning the way they should. They're still alive, they're living tissue, but they're not performing any useful function. And the reason why they've been taken offline can be due to several different pathways. But ultimately, the underlying pathophysiology is the same, and that is the mitochondria in each cell. And if people don't remember their high school biology, mitochondria are the little organelles that take oxygen and sugar and convert that to ATP, which is essentially the gasoline that our cells run on. And they're very sensitive. They can be easily poisoned. If the oxygen tension drops too low, they can go offline. And you may have a Ferrari, but if you don't have the gasoline to run that Ferrari, essentially you have an expensive lounge chair. So what hyperbaric oxygen therapy does is reinvigorate the mitochondria. It actually will make and allow the body to create more mitochondria, mitochondrial biogenesis. And now you have the energy for that cell to function the way it was supposed to. So, for example, in treating patients with stroke, this is where you get the very quickly large amounts of functional improvement if you have a lot of brain tissue that is still alive but was taken offline because of vascular compromise or edema from when the stroke happened. And also hyperbaric oxygen causes a recruitment of stem cells, which of course repair the brain tissue, although that process takes a little longer than just reinvigorating cells that are already alive. So that's essentially how it works in a whole host of brain injuries, whether that's a traumatic brain injury or carbon monoxide poisoning. And in the sense that that's how it works.
Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment here.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Kenneth Stoller, and he's just saying that, of course, what hyperbaric oxygen does is to stimulate the mitochondria, which are little organelles in the cells, and a lot of the cells, for one reason or another, just stop working. The mitochondria don't work. And what the hyperbaric oxygen does is to get them back online. And, of course, there is the amazing capacity of the brain in certain instances to regenerate itself, although that takes much longer. But, of course, sometimes why hyperbaric oxygen seems to promote stem cells, which are actually free floating cells coming from the marrow that are actually floating around in the blood supply. And they can, of course, if they localize the brain, they can become new brain tissue. And there is a capacity for people who've had what in the past we thought is irreversible brain injuries actually to improve or sometimes even to wake up after long periods of coma. Can this help to bring people out of comas, Dr. Kohler? Stoller?
Absolutely. I mean, it would seem to be obvious that when you have a brain injury, one of the primary things you want to do is restore oxygen to cells that may have been deprived of oxygen and continue to be deprived of oxygen because of edema or vascular compromise. So it's a very common sense thing, so simple that apparently too simple for a lot of people to accept. And as I alluded to before, when it comes to physicians, if they're not taught it by the time they matriculate from medical school, if they have no exposure to a therapy during their career, they find it a little difficult to accept that something that could do so much good for so many people has eluded them, because we're, as physicians, unknowingly brainwashed by the big pharmaceutical companies, unfortunately. And oxygen is not a patentable drug, so it is not being marketed to either physicians or the public.
Well, of course, it's being used primarily in strokes. It's being used primarily in children with cerebral palsy. And what about children with autism? Why don't you just start there wherever you'd like to and tell us what we know about how it's beneficial, or where it can help and where it can't help.
Well, first of all, let me say it's not a miracle cure. One doesn't walk into a hyperbaric chamber as a quadriplegic with a 13-year-old brain injury and the doors don't open and you come out dancing. But it will increase functionality to a great number of brain injuries, some more than others, and sometimes it's really hard to assess ahead of time who's going to benefit the most. And I know that bothers a lot of people that you can't offer guarantees or promises, but we've never treated a child that didn't improve. I just can't tell parents ahead of time, for example, on a scale from 1 to 10, where that child is going to end up. Now, in the case of autism, we have a situation where the brain has been poisoned. The autistic children represent a subset of the population who are very, very sensitive to heavy metal pollution. And the children that were born during the 1990s, who received all those vaccines that contained all that extra mercury preservative, ended up showing just how much the background level of mercury in our world was rising, because that was the straw that broke the camel's back for them, and their brains started to go offline. Now, I know that's not the official position of the CDC or the American Academy of Pediatrics, but that is, we do have enough evidence now to know that it was the mercury in the vaccines that set off the autism epidemic, because if you look at the several populations that were not vaccinated, the Amish population, there's a homeschool population in Illinois, there is no autism in these children. And the CDC will not fund any epidemiological studies to look at them because they know the answer. The CDC has always known the answer about that. And I don't want to get off the track if you want to talk about hyperbaric oxygen. but what happens in the autistic brain is you have to detoxify these children, because the hyperbaric oxygen, yes, will revive the poison mitochondria, but if you wake up the neurons and then they find themselves with all these heavy metals floating around them, they'll just get re-poisoned. So there's a rather involved process to help these children detoxify and correct the metabolic errors that they have. And I say metabolic errors in quote, it's really the heavy metals that caused most of the problems. If the heavy metals weren't there, these children wouldn't be autistic. And what should have happened, and I'm sorry, perhaps I'm not being politically correct here, what should have happened is the very agency that should have come to the rescue of these children, the Centers for Disease Control, remained less than silent on the issue, because they knew that they had been poisoning these children with the mercury, and really it's their job to rise to the occasion and say, you know, the global level of mercury pollution is becoming intolerable, and that coal-fired power plants should either shut down or stop spewing, you know, globally we're talking about thousands of tons of mercury into the atmosphere every year. It's poisoning the oceans. It's poisoning human life, and I know people are worried about global warming. We're going to poison ourselves off the planet before we ever cook ourselves off the planet. But back to hyperbaric oxygen, that is how it works. It revives the neurons, it revives the mitochondria, and I know there's some people saying, oh, we're just better at diagnosing the autistic children. They've always been there. Really? They've always been there? Show me the 30-year-olds and the 40-year-olds with autism. You don't see them.
Well, tell us, Dr. Stoller, certainly I concur with everything you're saying. I really think, of course, primarily poison was in those vaccines that they were giving, although you're absolutely right. We need to be absolutely certain we're not contaminating the fish and the air, but, of course, fortunately, we've stopped most of the mercury in the vaccines, but not all of it. But what has been your results? how well have the children done after they've been detoxified and then, of course, treated with the hyperbaric oxygen? And how old can the child be and still expect to get some improvement?
We have treated children who are 20 years old that have made remarkable recoveries. Now, it's not like, the movie with Cliff Roberts and Charlie, you know, from the play Flowers for Algernon. You don't, just because your brain comes back online doesn't mean you start acting like Einstein. If you have gone through many, many years interacting with life a certain way, having a certain self-image, just because your brain suddenly goes back online doesn't mean you change instantly. A lot of these older kids need to have a lot of coaching and encouragement to interact with life a different way and realizing that they have a different capacity, a brain capacity than they had before. We treated a 15-year-old with fetal alcohol syndrome. And if you go on the CDC website, you'll see that that is incurable and untreatable. This boy was so retarded that he was not allowed to stand trial for, he was considered incompetent to stand trial for an offense. And we follow these children with neurocognitive tests. And he was severely impaired before we started treating him. We treated him for about 40 sessions, and his scores were greatly improved. We purposely did not treat him again for 7 months because we wanted to see if he maintained the neurocognitive improvements that he had obtained during his first sessions. And for the most part, he did. And then we treated him again, and he surpassed high school and college mean scores in his neurocognitive exam. And, of course, I knew how well he was doing, and I went up to him and I said, so do you feel smarter? And he said, I guess so, you know. So you have to have an objective way of assessing how these patients do with brain injury, and we do that. Some people use SPECT scans. It's a type of functional brain imaging, and there's about an 85% correlation with what the scan looks like and how the patient's clinically doing. But we used a neurocognitive test because that's what we want to find out. We want to find out exactly how their brains are functioning, not just base our assessment on brain imaging. So we have multiple brain disorders that physicians are taught are really incurable. You just have to live with it. It's too bad, but that's the way it is. And here's a therapy, the Cinderella of modern medicine, as I call it, that is not getting the respect that it deserves, and the public doesn't know about it.
Well, I'll have to admit I haven't heard really. I remember hearing a little bit about it. Sydney is an orthopedic surgeon. When, of course, you had a patient with possible clostridia, a gas gangrene. But I never did send a patient actually to have the hyperbaric oxygen, although that was one of the few things that you could offer if there truly was gas gangrene. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Kenneth Stoller. A fascinating subject. If you have a question, my telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, this certainly, would you say that you get the children 50% better or 25% better or 75% better? Or all of them are going to improve, but, on average, how much improvement would be great to get?
That is a hard question.
Well, you don't have to answer it because I realize it's a hard question, but I'm fascinated by this, and autism is such a tragic situation for the parent, for the child, and it's destroyed so many families.
And it doesn't help that the powers that be are essentially running interference about the whole thing because they want to cover up their own culpability.
Well, you won't get any argument from me at all on that. I'm firmly convinced, having been to the CDC on other subjects and talking to the people there, there's some very wicked and evil people working at the Centers for Disease Control who have an entirely different agenda, because I think that they have a different worldview. But under any circumstances, how expensive a proposition is it to have the children treated? Will insurance actually help with this?
It depends what state you're in. It depends whether you have Medicaid or you have private insurance, and it depends which private insurance you have. So, you know, it's kind of all over the place in terms of reimbursement. You're not going to get Medi-Cal right now in California, for example, to pay for an autistic child. But there are other states where the Medicaid programs do pay for a brain injury in children, as they should. It's part of EPSDT paragraph 5, you know. So, you know, the federal Medicaid statute.
What about private insurance? I suppose it varies with the policy.
And the state, and, you know, for the most part, for the off-label indications, private insurance is, is not going to reimburse, but certain insurances do.
Are there very many of these tanks around? Because you have to have very, very special equipment. How large a unit is there, the hyperbaric tank?
Well, there's, you know, monoplace chambers, and there's multiplace chambers. Now, are you broadcasting from Monterey?
Yes, uh-huh.
The fire department there has a multiplace chamber, probably never gets used. But there's a good-sized multiplace chamber right in your fire, you know, the Monterey Fire Department.
Well, of course, we're right across the bay from there. I know that they use that, though, primarily for people with the beds, scuba divers who of course, have decompression illness.
Right. But that's just like, you know, the tip of the iceberg of what you could use it for.
But, I mean, certainly, what about the other areas? I mean, say a place like San Francisco or Los Angeles. Would they have one or two of these units?
Well, you know, the largest hyperbaric facility in Los Angeles is at UCLA, and that's the Gonda Wound Healing Center. And they have like a 16-person multi-place chamber. If there was appropriate utilization for hyperbaric oxygen, Los Angeles could support 10 centers the size of the UCLA center. And that's probably just on the on-label indications, never mind the off-label indications.
Now, you mentioned that they have this for wound healing. Is this actually being used then to... I'll go ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Stoller. We were just asking him the availability of these. He was saying that there is one at UCLA, a hyperbaric unit, where you can actually put 16 people into this. And he said this had to do with wound healing. So I was asking him, are they using these units to accelerate wound healing?
Yeah, absolutely. Hyperbaric oxygen will prevent 75% of major amputations in diabetic patients, which is why Medicare reimburses for hyperbaric oxygen therapy in diabetic patients. They recognize that it's cost effective. In fact, my organization, the International Hyperbaric Medical Association, petitioned CMS, Medicare, to have this approved as a reimbursable indication, and in 2003 it became a new indication for hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Well, you know, of course, as an orthopedic surgeon, there's nothing more discouraging than having a diabetic, and you know, of course, you've got a bad toe, and you take the toe off, and that doesn't heal, and then you take a forefoot off, and that doesn't heal, and you know, eventually it got to the point where you realized you were not going to get it to heal until you went to a BK, or so-called below-the-knee surgery. And I will tell you that one of the most disheartening things I ever had to do was cut off somebody's leg. I mean, it was just just heart-wrenching to do that. And so if this will help prevent amputations, this would be really wonderful. How you can actually prevent about three-quarters of the amputations?
Right, 75%. And, of course, the tragedy in amputating, doing a major amputation in a diabetic, is that statistically 50% of those patients will be dead within 3 years after you do a major amputation. So this is truly impacting not only the patient, but society as a whole. It's very costly, billions and billions of dollars to treat the consequences of diabetic amputations.
How many treatments would it take with a diabetic, with say a gangrenous?
I would say the average the number of treatments to treat a diabetic ulcer is about 40.
All right, fine. Well, then, of course, what happens after you get the thing treated? Do they have a tendency to get a recurrence, or do you have to keep giving them intermittent treatments?
Well, the hyperbaric oxygen doesn't cure the diabetes. So whatever neuropathy or problem existed in the first place still is there. And the hyperbaric oxygen is not a substitute for surgical vascular intervention. So if someone needs to have a vascular surgery, they still need to have it.
All right, fine. Of course, anyway, we'll help it get the ulcer or the gangrenous toe healed.
And by the same mechanism, bringing the mitochondria back online in the skin cells, and so new blood vessels and connective tissue grow into the hypoxic wound.
Well, I think that's really exciting. Of course, I've been out of this for about 12 years now, 13 years, so I'm sure there are lots of changes that have come down the line. But is this really being very widely accepted?
That's the $64 billion question, because there are obviously wound centers at major hospitals, and many of those wound centers have hyperbaric chambers. And I would say perhaps the 600 or so hyperbaric centers in the United States are primarily at hospitals and exclusively are for treating wounds. But I don't think it really matters when it comes right down to it whether the wound is in the brain or whether the wound is on the bottom of your foot. Normally it takes a medical therapy 10 to 20 years to become accepted standard of practice. But when you don't have a pharmaceutical company behind the therapy, it's a very slow go. And that's why I call hyperbaric oxygen the Cinderella of modern medicine.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Kenneth Stoller. If you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And the idea that you could actually help the autistic child after detoxifying them, I think is really, of course, very encouraging. The head injury that perhaps has been lagging for a matter of months, can they be helped as well? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Kenneth Stoller. And Dr. Stoller, certainly as far as your head injuries are concerned, let's get back to the head injury. How long after a head injury can you actually help people? And by head injury, I would include, of course, strokes, things of that sort.
Well, years and years and years. That doesn't mean the improvement you see 10 years or 20 years after an injury is the same level of improvement if it had been 10 days or 20 days after an injury. I would, much rather be treating a 50-year-old man with an acute brain injury than a 90-year-old man with a 30-year-old brain injury. You're not going to see the same thing. There have been patients many, many, many years out that still obtain benefit. And of course, you know, I was talking to you earlier about fetal alcohol syndrome, which we treated in a 15-year-old boy. Well, what does that mean? That's a 15-year-old matured brain injury that still responded. So, and we've treated children with cerebral palsy who are 10 years old, sometimes even older. These are brain injuries that are a decade old. Now, of course, you're dealing with children, and children are very resilient if you give them the right therapy. But cerebral palsy is called static encephalopathy, which means it's a brain injury that doesn't improve. And there are people who will go to their graves insisting that. There's a lot of ego and dogma involved in medicine today, but those of us who practice neurorehabilitation with hyperbaric oxygen see things a little differently, and thankfully our patients do as well.
Well, of course, the proof of the pudding is always in the eating, and of course, whether or not you know, if you have an opportunity to do something to help people, what about this friend of yours who you were talking about, the one who got you really interested in this? Did he ever get hyperbaric oxygen?
Well, I think he took about 2 weeks to come out of his coma, and he was a brilliant man, had an IQ of 160, and he still recognized me afterwards, but that had gotten bombed back sort of into the Stone Age, as it were. By the time I had opened my center, I tried contacting his family, but got no response. So, although he started me on the road, he never got the hyperbaric oxygen.
Well, that thought would be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Daniel calling, and we'll get to Daniel in just a moment or two. But before I go on, Dr. Stoller, I'd like you to get out your webpage. You've got a fascinating webpage, fascinating information. And so if people are interested in knowing more about what you're doing, how can they learn about it?
Well, they can go to my website, which is www.hbot.
H-B-O-T.
Right, for hyperbaric oxygen therapy. NM for New Mexico, hbotnm.com, and they can start off there. I know that Dr. Harch, a colleague of mine, a colleague and friend who's the director of the Hyperbaric Oxygen Fellowship at LSU, has just come out with a new book called The Oxygen Revolution, and they can get that at amazon.com. So there is reading material. There's a lot of information on the web. Not that the web is always perfect, but there's a lot of information to glean through.
Well, what about Sydney? Are people that Sydney have had other forms of mental illness? Is there any place here for depression or schizophrenia, anything like that?
What I tell people is if the mental illness was caused by a traumatic brain injury or an infection, an encephalitis or a meningitis, then there's the possibility that hyperbaric oxygen could help. But if there's no known reason, traumatic or infectious reason for the mental illness, then we have not found that the hyperbaric oxygen will treat that.
All right, so it's all in the sort of a learning phase. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's go to Daniel. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
You have a question for our guest?
Well, yes, I do. I have a nephew born almost 25 years ago, born with cerebral palsy, and he's had difficulty with any kind of speech for all of his life.
All right. Can he talk at all, or is it just he just isn't able to communicate at all?
Well, she can talk, but I don't understand her very well.
So, what about walking? Is he able to get around, look after himself?
Yes, he can get around. He's developed a little bit of mental illness sort of symptoms lately in the last, since his grandmother died.
All right, so he's a little, maybe a little depressed, but the major thing is, does he has, he can't talk, and is he able to look after himself, or does he have to have constant care?
He has fairly constant care from his mother.
All right, well, let's say that, Dr. Stoller, do you have any questions you'd like to ask? And then what are your thoughts on something like that, Dr. Stoller? He's a 25-year-old person.
Yeah, my counsel would be the same that I give my own patients, and that is, in all likelihood, there will be improved brain function, but I can't tell anyone in advance on a scale from 1 to 10, whether we're going to go to 1 or we're going to go to 5.
Yeah, I got that. I got that early in your program. But what I'm saying is it worth the effort and all the rigmarole with a boy who's basically 25 years old?
Okay, that's a very legitimate question. What are your thoughts on that? Of course, there is an expense involved in that as well, too, isn't it, Dr. Stoller?
Understood. And I can't, that's for the family, has to decide that. We have seen improvement in very, very old brain injuries, and sometimes significant improvement, but that doesn't mean in this particular case you may only have 10% improvement. But you know, for example, if you have an IQ, let's say, of 30, and you have a 10% improvement, well, now you have an IQ of 33.
He's very sharp.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to say is, if you're severely impaired and you have a small percentage of improvement, you're still going to be severely impaired. But if you have an IQ of 100 and you have 10% improvement, now you have an IQ of 110 plus or minus. So I would not discourage you from using this therapy, but no promises can be made.
Would you have any idea after 10 treatments or 5 treatments whether it's going to be beneficial?
We tell people that they really should wait until the 20th treatment before they decide whether or not this is working for them. And now sometimes the improvement is very dramatic in the first 20. You don't have to wait to the 20th treatment. You already know that it's working, and it's working very well. But in other cases, it doesn't work as well. All I can say is we rarely see a case that doesn't improve, but we cannot make promises of how much improvement is going to happen in advance.
All right, fine. Well, how long does the treatment take? Is it an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours? How long does it take?
It depends on the situation. We treat brain injuries for only 60 minutes.
60 minutes, okay, fine.
Right.
I actually have one last question in regards to this, and that's does he have to travel a lot? He lives in Chico with his Chico, California, with his mother and stepfather, and it might be more difficult if he has to travel to L.A. or something.
Well, I have good news for you. There's a hyperbaric center in Chico.
There is in Chico?
Yes.
How do they contact them?
Yeah, well, it's run by Mitch Hogarth, and I think it's called Chico Hyperbarics. So if you Google Hyperbarics in Chico, you'll find it right away.
Okay, do you have access to a computer, Daniel?
I Hyperbarics.
And if you have any problems, you can always call me on the 800 number here. And
well, thank you both very much.
God bless.
This is really of great interest to me.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's something that it might be worth trying if it's at all feasible.
Yeah, especially if you travel across town. So.
But, of course, will you let me know what happens? If they do decide to do something, I'd like to get a follow-up for my own information, okay?
Yeah.
God bless. Thanks very much, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
All right, fine. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. Kenneth Stoller. And, of course, are you still president of the Hyperbaric Organization?
Right, yes. And I'm medical director of the Hyperbaric Oxygen Clinic in Sacramento, California, as well as the one in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
All right, fine. So you have actually two of them back and forth. All right, fine. Well, of course, now, is this catching a hold? In other words, are more people coming in than they did, say, 5 years ago?
Yes. The answer is yes. Especially in the autism community.
All right, well, tell us more about the autism, because that, of course, is something that's very close to my heart, and, you know, the tragedy of autism. And, if you're able to help these children at all. Now, do you know whether it, of course, is the detoxification or is it the hyperbaric oxygen? In other words, do you evaluate them before they get the hyperbaric oxygen after they're detoxified and then afterwards?
Yes, I mean it's of course their parents are the main evaluators, but whenever possible, if they're functioning at a high enough level, we have them do a neurocognitive test. We have questionnaires that the parents fill out, so we can have something objective to evaluate their progress. And sometimes it's just quite clearly obvious to everyone. When somebody isn't talking before the therapy and is talking after the therapy, that there's obviously improved neurocognitive function.
Well, I mean, I've talked to people, of course, have had their children, treated, and it's almost as if a veil seems to lift from them. And, of course, what's really so unconscionable is the government and organized medicine here, and not being critical of the doctors, I'm being critical of the AMA and medical organizations, are doing everything they can to discourage parents from getting treatment. And, of course, about 3 or 4 months ago, we had a massive propaganda campaign in every major means of communication talking about this epidemic, and all shucks, we have no idea what's the cause of it. We can assure you, however, it is not the mercury in the vaccines, and there's no effective treatment, and don't risk your child, getting detoxified. That was what really bothered me, because I know that they know, of course, that it would be beneficial.
They know. They don't want you to know.
All right, because that's not the average doctor. Please don't think I'm suggesting the average doctor would do anything at all to hurt a child or anybody else. But there are some people who would.
Well, yes, and unfortunately they're running the Centers for Disease Control. The average doctor doesn't know, and they trust. You know, when you're in medical school, you trust what you are taught, and you come to respect certain sources of information. So most doctors, the furthest thing from their mind is that the respected NIH or the CDC would be lying to them. But that is, in fact, what has been taking place with the autism epidemic.
You're absolutely right. In fact, the same thing took place with the AIDS epidemic. If any of you out there in the listening audience have not read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, I go into my experience with the Centers for Disease Control, my trip to the Centers for Disease Control, my opportunity to talk to the head and the CDC at that time was Jim Curran, at least on the AIDS epidemic, and I liked Jim Curran. I thought he was an honest man. And he asked me what he should do, and I told him, you do what's right, and he did what's right. He quit his job and got another job because he wasn't capable of, addressing the epidemic the way it should have been addressed. He was blocked at every turn, just as I was blocked at every turn, but some of the people at the CDC knew exactly what they were doing. So I'm sure it's the same with the autism epidemic. And it's very difficult to believe that people would be working at the CDC for one reason, and that is to hurt children. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this is really an exciting concept, that there may well be something that we can actually do to help these tragic children. We've got Jack here calling, and I guess it's Jack calling again from Michigan. Hi, Jack. Did you have another question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Steen. I was wondering if Dr. Stoller has any data that suggests potential therapeutic effects for people with, say, congestive heart failure, atrial fib, kidney failure, cancers. Is there any potential therapeutic effects for those people? And secondly, what about prophylactically, if I want to look at anti-aging longevity benefits?
Well, I'll start with your last question. You don't have to be overtly diseased to benefit from hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And there are people who use it on a periodic basis for wellness enhancement. I know there's some research being done, it hasn't been published yet, on the fact that the kidneys can, that the hyperbaric oxygen will help people's kidneys who have chronic renal failure.
Oh, man.
And I, as again, that has not been published yet. What was the other part of your question?
Well, congestive heart failure, a conduction defect.
There's no question that hyperbaric oxygen therapy would be a wonderful therapeutic intervention for someone having a myocardial infarction, but it does not help congestive heart failure per se.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what about possibly cancer?
Its role in cancer at the moment is primarily in treating people who have had too much radiation therapy, because the radiation for cancer burns out the capillaries in the area of the body where the cancer is being treated. So, for example, if someone had a head and neck tumor, received a lot of radiotherapy, they would benefit from hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and the oral surgeons know that if they try to do a dental procedure on a cancer patient that's received head and neck radiation, they'll instantly have lost their malpractice suit if they don't refer that patient first for hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Now, in the 1950s, research was being done showing that if you gave a cancer patient hyperbaric oxygen therapy immediately prior to giving them radiation therapy, that you would sensitize their solid tumors and to the radiation, and you would actually get a better kill rate from the radiotherapy if you gave them hyperbaric oxygen therapy first. Now, that never translated into the clinical practice of oncology, unfortunately. But we do know that, we do know that the therapeutic effect. Now, some people believe that the hyperoxygenated state will also discourage solid tumors from growing, and the preponderance of the animal data supports that. But we do not treat cancer with hyperbaric oxygen therapy. But there, I'm not saying that sometime in the future that might not be part of the therapy.
But now, is there any danger of getting oxygen toxicity from hyperbaric treatment?
Not at the way it's being used. Obviously, hyperbaric oxygen, if you're breathing hyperbaric oxygen for hours and hours and hours, you will get oxygen toxicity, but that's not how patients get treated.
And what do you use, increased pressure or just increased amounts of oxygen?
No, it's the pressure. The pressure is more important than the oxygen, adding the extra oxygen in.
All right, fine. So what is the pressure you're using?
For wound healing, we use 2.4 atmospheres. For brain injury, we use 1.5.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a minute. Thanks so much for calling, Jack.
Thank you.
Well, Dr. Stoller, we've got three more minutes for you to wrap up the program tonight.
Okay.
Why don't you just, what message would you like to leave with our listeners out across America?
Well, you know, I think it'll be a good idea for the man on the street. This is how hyperbaric oxygen is going to become part of standard medical practice when the man on the street demands it. So the more people who find out about it and learn about what it can do, the sooner that can happen.
And, of course, it would appear that there is certainly at least some more interest in it. And are you doing a lot of talk radio to get the information out?
Here and there, you know.
They're not that much in demand, then.
Well, I've done radio programs, but I don't have my own primetime TV show, and that would get it out there. Huh?
Well, anyway, of course, I would like to get you back on some of our other programs. We actually have three different audiences every day, and this is an excellent audience you're talking to, but I would like to have my other audiences hear about it, so I will be giving you a call and try to get you to come on sometimes your convenience, where we could let our other listeners know, because my major concern would be certainly for the head injuries, for those children with fetal alcohol syndrome, which is such a tragic, tragic situation, and, of course, for those autistic children. And, of course, then for the cerebral palsy children, anything that could be done to help them would certainly be very, very heartening.
Right. Well, when my article was published in Pediatrics on the fetal alcohol syndrome case, it was met with resounding silence, except in the autism community.
And, of course, is the autism community, of course, they're desperate for any sort of help, and you know, because they've been discouraged from getting treatment in the past so very, very much.
So, you know, in the group, you know, and I'm not talking about all autistic families, but in the families that have made the effort to find out something different than what their physicians are telling them, biomedical intervention and hyperbarics has become the standard treatment for autism.
Really, Chris, we've done a lot of talking on autism, and this is the first time I've heard of it, but I'm glad I have, because it's a constant learning experience, and the nice thing about being retired is now I have time to learn about a lot of the aspects of medicine I never had the opportunity to do when I was practicing full-time. Dr. Stoller, thank you so very much for taking your time to be with us this evening. I appreciate it, and I hope my audience has learned as much as I have.
You're very welcome.
Good night, and God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope if you're out in the listening audience, you've enjoyed our program. And, of course, we don't have anything on hyperbaric oxygen therapy, but we have certainly some excellent talks on autism. We have two four-tape sets on autism. I should say we have one four-tape set on autism. We have two four-tape sets on mercury, and, of course, that includes both the mercury in your fillings and, of course, the what has happened as far as the mercury in the injections. And, of course, this is not only for children. This is the scam of giving influenza shots to the elderly, which don't do any good, other than, of course, to increase the incidence of Alzheimer's disease about 1,000%. Now, to begin to put things into perspective, we have an excellent talk by Dr. Ayoub. It's entitled Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda, although it couldn't be gotten simply by asking for Dr. Ayoub's talk. It is available on the Internet at Google. Just Google in Dr. Ayoub or Ayoub, Radio Liberty, Ayoub, and you can pull it down. But we hope many of you will want to get the video, and it'll be available on DVD very, very soon if you want. And it, with that, of course, comes a CD. Actually, it is available both in CD and in video. And, of course, it comes with a free CD that has thousands of pages of research going into the whole background of how, of course, it's very obvious that they know that they're poisoning our children. And Dr. Abe's an excellent job. So you will have, many weeks of study material on that CD, and you'll enjoy the DVD. We actually have two DVDs that are provided by Dr. Kennedy. One's called The Smoking Truth. The other is called Thimerosal. Fascinating, about 20 minutes of an interview that was done by a commercial television station as they began to try to track down the story. And, of course, they interview people from the CDC, and then they interview doctors who are pointing out the relationship between the mercury and the autism. And as you watch them talking to these experts from the government, you know very well they're lying. It's really very, very skillfully done. And then, of course, it has a session on there with Dr. Geyer and his son talking certainly what they've learned about the relationship between thimerosal and autism. And actually, they had the opportunity of getting into the Centers for Disease Control databanks, where one group of children had been given mercury-containing vaccines and the other had not. There was a 27 times difference in autism between those who got the mercury and those who did not. And that is, of course, why they cannot let this information get out, because there's criminal liability here. They know they're destroying the minds of our children. Why would anybody want to do that? Well, you need to talk on planned population reduction. That's planned population reduction. You need to read the National Security Study Memorandum 200. You need, of course, to hear my talk on population control, the four-tape set on population control, and, of course, read my monograph, the Population Control Agenda monograph, which incidentally you can pull down free of charge at our website, which is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. So you'd want to get certainly the two four-tape sets on mercury, the four-tape set on autism, Dr. Ayub's excellent talk on mercury, autism, and the Global Population Agenda monograph, my talk on planned population reduction, population control, and then, of course, the four-tape set on population control, and the National Security Study Memorandum 200, the government plan for population control. Well, of course, pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. America is under attack today. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.